I know really that it's not such a big deal. But it's almost impossible for me to keep my emotions contained. Once I've made a mistake, the fact of it starts rushing toward me like a tsunami. And then, like trees or houses being destroyed by the tsunami, I get destroyed by the shock. I get swallowed up in the moment and can't tell the right response from the wrong response. All I know is that I have to get out of the situation as soon as I can so I don't drown. To get away, I'll do anything. Crying, screaming, and throwing things, hitting out even. Finally, I'll calm down and come back to myself. Then I see no sign of the tsunami attack, only the wreckage I've made. And when I see that, I hate myself. I just hate myself. Question 21. Why don't you do what you're told right away? There are times when I can't do what I want to or what I have to. It doesn't mean I don't want to do it. I just can't get it all together somehow. Even performing one straightforward task, I can't get started as smoothly as you can. Here's how I have to go about things. 1. I think about what I'm going to do. 2. I visualize how I'm going to do it. 3. I encourage myself to get going. How smoothly I can do the job depends on how smoothly this process goes. There are times when I can't act, even though I really badly want to. This is when my body is beyond my control. I don't mean I'm ill or anything. It's as if my whole body, except for my soul, feels as if it belongs to somebody else, and I have zero control over it. I don't think you could ever imagine what an agonizing sensation this is. You can't always tell just by looking at people with autism, but we never really feel that our bodies are our own. They're always acting up and going outside our control. Stuck inside them, we're struggling so hard to make them do what we tell them. Question 22. Do you hate it when we make you do things? Us kids with autism would like you to watch out for us, meaning, please never give up on us. The reason I say, watch out for us, is that we can be made stronger just by the fact you're watching. Just going by how we respond, it's difficult for you to tell if we've understood what you're saying or not. And often, we still can't do something, however often you've shown us how to do it. That's just the way we are. On our own, we simply don't know how to get things done the same way you do them. But, like everyone else, we want to do the best we possibly can. When we sense you've given up on us, it makes us feel miserable. So please keep helping us through to the end. Question 23. What's the worst thing about having autism? You never notice. Really, you have no idea quite how miserable we are. The people who are looking after us may say, minding these kids is really hard work, you know. But for us, who are always causing the problems and are useless at pretty much everything we try to do, you can't begin to imagine how miserable and sad we get. Whenever we've done something wrong, we get told off or laughed at without even being able to apologize, and we end up hating ourselves and despairing about our own lives again and again and again. It's impossible not to wonder why we were born into this world as human beings at all. But I ask you, those of you who are with us all day, not to stress yourselves out because of us. When you do this, it feels as if you're denying any value at all that our lives may have, and that saps the spirit we need to soldier on. The hardest ordeal for us is the idea that we are causing grief for other people. We can put up with our own hardships okay, but the thought that our lives are the source of other people's unhappiness? That's plain unbearable. Question 24. Would you like to be normal? What would we do if there was some way that we could be normal? Well, I bet the people around us, our parents and teachers, would be ecstatic with joy and say, "Hallelujah, we'll change them back to normal right now." And for ages and ages, I badly wanted to be normal too. Living with special needs is so depressing and so relentless, I used to think it'd be the best thing if I could just live my life like a normal person. But now, even if somebody developed a medicine to cure autism, I might well choose to stay as I am. Why have I come around to thinking this way? To give the short version, I've learned that every human being, with or without disabilities, needs to strive to do their best. And by striving for happiness, you will arrive at happiness. For us, you see, having autism is normal. So we can't know for sure what your normal is even like. But so long as we can learn to love ourselves, I'm not sure how much it matters whether we're normal or autistic. Earthling, an Autism Man. I was traveling with my family to Hokkaido by airplane. It was the first time I'd flown for many years, and I was surprised to find that the sensation of gravity pulling at my body was really pleasant. I hadn't noticed this the time I'd flown before, because I was still a little kid back then. Anyway, I made up this very short story. Once upon a time, on a small, green, quiet planet. Autism Man. So, welcome to my home world. Earthling. Don't you feel weighed down? It feels as if I've got weights strapped to my arms and legs. Autism Man. Ah, but on your planet, I always feel as if I'm swimming around in space weightlessly. Earthling. Okay. Now I understand you. I really understand. If only there was a planet somewhere with a gravitational pull perfect for people with autism, then we'd be able to move around freely. Question 25. What's the reason you jump? What do you think I'm feeling when I'm jumping up and down clapping my hands? I bet you think I'm not really feeling anything much beyond the manic glee all over my face. But when I'm jumping, it's as if my feelings are going upward to the sky. Really, my urge to be swallowed up by the sky is enough to make my heart quiver. When I'm jumping, I can feel my body parts really well too, my bounding legs and my clapping hands, and that makes me feel so, so good. So that's one reason why I jump, and recently I've noticed another reason. People with autism react physically to feelings of happiness and sadness. So when something happens that affects me emotionally, my body seizes up as if struck by lightning. Seizing up doesn't mean that my muscles literally get stiff and immobile. Rather, it means that I'm not free to move the way I want. So by jumping up and down, it's as if I'm shaking loose the ropes that are tying up my body. When I jump, I feel lighter, and I think the reason my body is drawn skyward is that the motion makes me want to change into a bird and fly off to some faraway place. But constrained both by ourselves and by the people around us, all we can do is tweet, tweet, flap our wings, and hop around in a cage. Ah, if only I could just flap my wings and soar away into the big blue yonder, over the hills and far away. Question 26. Why do you write letters in the air? People with autism often write letters in the air. Are you trying to tell us something, or are you thinking about something, you must be wondering? I guess. In my case, I'm writing to confirm what I want to remember. As I write, I'm recalling what I've seen, not as scenes, but as letters, signs, and symbols. Letters, symbols, and signs are my closest allies because they never change. They just stay as they are, fixed in my memory. And whenever we're lonely or happy, in the same way that you might half hum a song to yourself, we summon up our letters. When I'm writing them out, I can forget everything else. I'm not alone when I'm with letters. Letters and symbols are much easier for us to grasp than spoken words, and we can be with them whenever we want. Question 27. Why do people with autism often cup their ears? Is it when there's a lot of noise? There are certain noises you don't notice, but that really get to us. The problem here is that you don't understand how these noises affect us. It's not quite that the noise is great on our nerves. It's more to do with a fear that if we keep listening, we'll lose all sense of where we are. At times like these, it feels as if the ground is shaking and the landscape around us starts coming to get us, and it's absolutely terrifying. So cupping our ears is a measure we take to protect ourselves and get back our grip on where we are. The noises that get to people with autism vary from person to person. I don't know how we'd cope if we couldn't cup our ears. Me too, I cup my ears sometimes, though I've gradually gotten used to the noises by pressing my hands over my ears less and less heavily. Some people can overcome the problem by slowly becoming accustomed to the noises, I guess. What matters most is that we learn to feel safe and secure even when the noises strike us. Question 28. Why do you move your arms and legs about in that awkward way? In my gym class, the teacher tells me to do things like stretch your arms and bend at the knees, but I don't always know what my arms and legs are up to, not exactly. For me, I have no clear sensation of where my arms and legs are attached or how to make them do what I'm telling them to do. It's as if my limbs are a mermaid's rubbery tail. I think the reason why some kids with autism try to get hold of an object by borrowing someone else's hand is that they can't tell how far they need to extend their own arms to reach the object. They're not too sure how to actually grab the object either, because we have problems perceiving and gauging distances. By constant practice, however, we should be able to overcome this difficulty. That said, I still can't even tell when I've stepped on someone's foot or jostled someone out of my way. So something connected with my sense of touch might be miswired too. Question 29. Why do you do things the rest of us don't? Do your senses work differently in some way? Why don't you wear shoes? Why will you only wear half-length sleeves? Why do you always shave off or pluck out your body hair? Doesn't it hurt? Every time us people with autism do something that other people wouldn't, it must make you wonder why. Do people with autism possess different senses? Or do these actions just give us some sort of kick? To my mind, both answers are barking up the wrong tree. The reason could be that we've gotten into such a state that if we don't do these actions, we'll go to pieces completely. If you talk about someone's senses working differently, it means that the person's nervous system is somehow malfunctioning. But I believe that in our case, there's nothing wrong with us at a nerve level. Instead, it's actually our emotions that trigger the abnormal reactions. It's only natural for anyone stuck in a bad place to try to get out of it, and it's my own despair that causes me to misread the messages my senses are sending me. If all of my attention gets focused on one area of my body, it's as if all of my body's energy is concentrated there too, which is when my senses all report that something in that area is going badly wrong. If a person without autism is going through a hard time, he or she can talk it over with someone or make a ruckus about it. But in our case, that's not an option. We can never make ourselves understood. Even when we're in the middle of a panic attack, people either don't get what's happening to us, or else they just tell us to stop crying. My guess is that the despair we're feeling has nowhere to go and fills up our entire bodies, making our senses more and more confused. Question 30. Why are you too sensitive or insensitive to pain? Among people with autism, there are some who make a huge fuss when they have their hair or nails trimmed, even though it shouldn't hurt at all. At the same time, there are people who stay very calm and collected even when they've got an injury that's obviously painful. I don't think this is all to do with nerves and nerve endings. It's more a matter of inner pain expressing itself via the body. When memories suddenly come to people, we experience a flashback. But in the case of people with autism, memories are not stored in a clear order. For those of us who are disturbed by having their hair and nails trimmed, somehow their negative memories are probably connected to the action. A normal person might say, "Oh, he's never liked having his hair cut or his nails trimmed ever since he was small, and we've no idea why." But the thing is, the memory of a person with autism isn't like a number scale from which you pick out the recollection you're after. It's more like a jigsaw puzzle, where if even just one piece is misinserted, the entire puzzle becomes impossible to complete. What's more, a single piece that doesn't belong there can mess up all the surrounding memories as well. So it's not necessarily physical pain that's making us cry at all. Quite possibly, it's memory. As for people who don't show any signs of pain, my guess is that they're unable to keep those signs on display. I think it's very difficult for you to properly get your heads around just how hard it is for us to express what we're feeling. For us, dealing with the pain by treating it as if it's already gone is actually easier than letting other people know we are in pain. Normal people think we're highly dependent and can't live without ongoing support. But in fact, there are times when we are stoic heroes. Question 31. Why are you so picky about what you eat? Some people with autism keep to a very limited diet, it's true. I don't really have this problem myself, but to some degree I can understand where they're coming from, I think. We do this business called eating 3 times a day, but for some people, having to eat different meals each time can be a major headache. Each type of food has its distinct taste, color, and shape. Usually, these differences are what make eating a pleasure. But for some people with autism, only those foodstuffs they can actually think of as food have any taste. Everything else is about as appetizing as toy food you might be served at a little kid's pretend tea time. So why do these people experience new food this way? You could say, because their sense of taste is all messed up and be done with it. But couldn't you also say that they just need more time than the average person to come to appreciate unknown types of food? Even if they'd be happy sticking with only those foods they're used to eating, in my opinion, meals aren't just about nutrition. Meals are also about finding joy in life. Eating is living, and picky eaters should definitely be nudged toward trying different foods little by little. That's what I reckon anyway. Question 32. When you look at something, what do you see first? So how do people with autism see the world exactly? We, and only we, can ever know the answer to that one. Sometimes, I actually pity you for not being able to see the beauty of the world in the same way we do. Really, our vision of the world can be incredible. Just incredible. You might reply, but the eyes we all use to look at things work the same way, right? Fair enough. You may be looking at the exact same things as us, but how we perceive them appears to be different. When you see an object, it seems that you see it as an entire thing first, and only afterward do its details follow on. But for people with autism, the details jump straight out at us first of all, and then only gradually, detail by detail, does the whole image sort of float up into focus. What part of the whole image captures our eyes first depends on a number of things. When a color is vivid or a shape is eye-catching, then that's the detail that claims our attention, and then our hearts kind of drown in it, and we can't concentrate on anything else. Every single thing has its own unique beauty. People with autism get to cherish this beauty, as if it's a kind of blessing given to us. Wherever we go, whatever we do, we can never be completely lonely. We may look like we're not with anyone, but we're always in the company of friends. Question 33. Is it difficult for you to choose appropriate clothing? Whether it's hot or whether it's cold, I always have a hard time choosing the right clothing, as well as putting extra layers on or peeling them off accordingly. Some people with autism keep wearing exactly the same type of clothes all through the year, in fact. What's the deal here? What's so tricky about putting on or taking off clothes as you need to? Well, search me. It might be scorching hot, and we know it's scorching hot, but it simply might not occur to a person with autism that taking off a layer is a good idea. It's not that we don't understand the logic. It's just that we somehow forget. We forget what we're wearing and how to make ourselves cooler. I can mop the sweat off my face with my handkerchief, at least. I'm used to doing this now. But adjusting my clothing is a taller order because the situation is often changing. So I can well sympathize with those people with autism who prefer to wear the same clothes day in, day out. Clothes are like an extension of our bodies, an outer skin. And so the day-in, day-outers find it reassuring to stick to the same outfit. We feel obliged to do everything we can to protect ourselves against uncertainty, and wearing comfy clothes we like is one way of doing this. Question 34. Do you have a sense of time? Time is a continuous thing with no clear boundaries, which is why it's so confusing for people with autism. Perhaps you're puzzled about why time intervals and the speed of time are so hard for us to gauge, and why time seems such slippery stuff for people with autism. For us, time is as difficult to grasp as picturing a country we've never been to. You can't capture the passing of time on a piece of paper. The hands of a clock may show that some time has passed, but the fact that we can't actually feel it makes us nervous. Because I have autism, I know all about this and I feel it myself. Believe me, this is scary stuff. We're anxious about what kind of condition we'll be in at a future point and what problems we'll trigger. People who have effortless control over themselves and their bodies never really experience this fear. For us, 1 second is infinitely long, yet 24 hours can hurtle by in a flash. Time can only be fixed in our memories in the form of visual scenes. For this reason, there's not a lot of difference between 1 second and 24 hours. Exactly what the next moment has in store for us never stops being a big, big worry. Question 35. Why are your sleep patterns all messed up? Quite a few people with autism find it hard to fall asleep at night. When I was little, there were times when I couldn't fall asleep either, even when it got really late. This seems strange, because we human beings aren't nocturnal animals, right? But now, I rarely have this problem. The cure might simply be time. People who can't sleep may appear to be okay on the outside, while inside they're exhausted. I don't really know what causes sleeping disorders, so all I want to ask you to do here is, if your autistic child isn't going to sleep at a decent hour, please don't tell them off, even if it goes on night after night after night. Never-ending summer. People with autism can be restless and fidgety all the time, almost to the point of it looking comical. It's as if it's summer for us the whole year round. Most people look pretty relaxed when they're not doing anything in particular, but we're always zooming off madly like a kid who's late for school. We're like cicadas who'll miss the summer unless we hurry, hurry, hurry. Bzzz, bzzz, crick, 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 sure. We cry our hearts out, shout our heads off, and never rest in our battle against time. As autumn comes around the year's corner, the cicadas' lives come to an end. Human beings still have plenty of time in store. But we who have autism, who are semi-detached from the flow of time, we are always uneasy from sunrise to sunset. Just like the cicadas, we cry out, we call out. Question 36. Why do you like spinning? Us people with autism often enjoy spinning ourselves around and around. We like spinning whatever object comes to hand, for that matter. Can you understand what's so much fun about spinning? Every day, scenery doesn't rotate, so things that do spin simply fascinate us. Just watching spinning things fills us with a sort of everlasting bliss. For the time we sit watching them, they rotate with perfect regularity. Whatever object we spin, this is always true. Unchanging things are comforting, and there's something beautiful about that. Question 37. Why do you flap your fingers and hands in front of your face? Flapping our fingers and hands in front of our faces allows the light to enter our eyes in a pleasant, filtered fashion. Light that reaches us like this feels soft and gentle, like moonlight. But unfiltered, direct light sort of needles its way into the eyeballs of people with autism in sharp, straight lines. So we see too many points of light. This actually makes our eyes hurt. This said, we couldn't get by without light. Light wipes away our tears, and when we're bathed in light, we're happy. Perhaps we just love how its particles pour down on us. Light particles somehow console us. I admit this is something I can't quite explain using logic. Question 38. Why do you line up your toy cars and blocks? Lining things up is the best fun. Watching running water is great fun too. Other kids seem to enjoy games about pretending and make-believe, but as a person with autism, I never really see the point of them. What I care about, in fact I'm pretty obsessive about this, is the order things come in and different ways of lining them up. It's actually the lines and the surfaces of things like jigsaw puzzles that we love and things like that. When we're playing in this way, our brains feel refreshed and clear. Question 39. Why do you like being in the water? We just want to go back to the distant, distant past, to a primeval era, in fact, before human beings even existed. All people with autism feel the same about this one, I reckon. Aquatic life forms came into being and evolved, but why did they then have to emerge onto dry land and turn into human beings who chose to lead lives ruled by time? These are real mysteries to me. In the water, it's so quiet, and I'm so free and happy there. Nobody hassles us in the water, and it's as if we've got all the time in the world. Whether we stay in one place, or whether we're swimming about, when we're in the water, we can really be at one with the pulse of time. Outside of the water, there's always too much stimulation for our eyes and our ears, and it's impossible for us to guess how long 1 second is or how long an hour takes. People with autism have no freedom. The reason is that we are a different kind of human, born with primeval senses. We are outside the normal flow of time. We can't express ourselves, and our bodies are hurtling us through life. If only we could go back to that distant, distant, watery past. Then we'd all be able to live as contentedly and as freely as you lot. Question 40. Do you like commercials on TV? This is a difficult one. I'm not quite sure what the answer is. If you figured that we must like TV commercials just because the slogans and catchphrases roll off our tongue so easily, that wouldn't be the full story. We remember them as well as we do because they're on so often, and sure, we dash to the TV when a familiar commercial comes on. We enjoy watching the ones we know well. How come you people without autism aren't that keen on TV commercials? They're on again and again and again, after all. So isn't seeing them a bit like being visited by old and dear friends? I'm not a big fan of TV commercials in and of themselves, but when a familiar ad comes on, I get quite excited about it. This is because when a familiar one comes on, I already know what it's talking about, and I feel sort of soothed knowing that they never last for long. The reason why we look happy to your eyes while we're watching TV ads must be that at all other times we're less stable and calm, and our faces are blanker. Perhaps what you're getting when you look at us watching commercials on the TV is a brief glimpse of the real us. Question 41. What kind of TV programs do you enjoy? Even at my age, I still enjoy this TV program for kindergarten kids, Watching with Mother. Reading that, you must be thinking, ah, this guy's just a big kid after all. But that's not the case, in my humble opinion. Sure, we may appear to resemble small children, our fondness for gentle, kind, beautiful things. But we tend to prefer simpler, more straightforward stories, not because of childishness, but because we can more easily guess what's going to happen next. This allows us to stay more relaxed and more engaged. Plus, the simpler stories tend to repeat themselves a lot. So when we get to a familiar scene, we can get all excited and make a happy fuss. People with autism get quite a kick out of repetition. If I was asked how come, my reply would be this. When you're in a strange new place, aren't you relieved too if you run into a friendly, familiar face? What we just don't do are disputes, bargaining, or criticizing others. We're totally helpless in these scenarios. A story I heard somewhere. There was once a girl who loved dancing, and she wore red shoes. Everybody who knew her thought, that girl will keep dancing until the day she dies, and who knows, maybe the girl thought the same thing herself. One night, when the whole world was fast asleep, she began dancing. She went, a twirl and a whirl and a leaping curl, a skippity-skippity-skip-skip-skip, a tappity-tappity-tap-tap-tap, a tra-la-dee-da and a tim-tam-tom. The girl was in a state of sheer bliss. How sublime it is to dance! A whole week went by in this manner. Then she thought, I wonder how much longer I can keep this up. By this point, she was almost dead on her feet, but all she wished for was to keep on dancing, dancing, dancing. Then, on the eighth day, this handsome young man appeared. He said to her, would you care to dance with me? With that, the girl stopped dancing. She said, thanks, but no. I've just discovered something more precious than dancing. Then, in a small house, they lived happily ever after. Question 42. Why do you memorize train timetables and calendars? Because it's fun. We get a real kick out of numbers as people with autism. Numbers are fixed, unchanging things. The number one, for example, is only ever, ever the number one. That simplicity, that clearness, it's so comforting to us. Whoever reads any given timetable or calendar, it's always, always the same. You can easily understand all of them by following the same set of rules. And when it comes to our favorite things, we can memorize these as easily as if they were jumping straight into our heads. Invisible things like human relationships and ambiguous expressions, however, these are difficult for us people with autism to get our heads around. Perhaps you're thinking that it's no major effort for me to write these sentences, but that wouldn't be true at all. Always lurking at the back of my mind is an anxiety about whether or not I'm perceiving things in the same way that people without autism do. So, via TV, books, and just tuning into the people around me, I'm constantly learning about how ordinary people are supposed to feel in given situations. And whenever I learn something new, I write a short story dealing with the situation in question. This way, with luck, it won't slip my mind. Question 43. Do you dislike reading and picking apart long sentences? No, I don't dislike longer sentences. Whatever else is going on, I'm always hungry to learn about lots of different things. It really gets me down that people just don't understand how hungry for knowledge people with autism actually are. The problem isn't that I dislike longer sentences. The problem is that my patience wears out so quickly. I get tired so soon and lose all track of what the sentence was about. I can read simple picture books without much trouble, so when I'm alone, I tend to choose one of these. They are easy to follow and stimulate my imagination, and I never get bored with them. I want to grow up learning a million things. There must be countless other people with autism who have the same desire, the same attitude. But our problem is, we aren't capable of studying all by ourselves. To be able to study like other people, we need more time and different strategies and approaches. And those people who help us study, they actually need more patience than we do. They need to understand our eagerness to learn, even though from the outside, we may not appear to be keen students. But we are. We too want to grow. Question 44. What do you think about running races? I don't hate races, but the instant I'm conscious of the need to run fast, I find that I can't. If I'm just running for fun with my friends, I find I can run as long as I want to. It's as if I'm making friends with the wind. Sometimes people say that I'm very good at running away, but really it's just that when someone's chasing me, I find it both funny and frightening when the chaser is catching up to me. This prompts me to put on a spurt of speed, and I'm off. The reason I can't run well once I'm aware of needing to isn't to do with nerves. My problem is that as soon as I try to run fast, I start thinking about how I ought to be moving my arms and legs, and then my whole body freezes up. And another reason I don't do well in races is that I don't really get any pleasure out of beating other people. I agree that it's right and proper to do the best you can in a race, but this desire to beat everyone else is another matter altogether. So on competitive occasions like school sports days, the pleasure I get just by being there takes over, and I'll end up running the race with all the urgency of someone skipping his way across a meadow. Question 45. Why do you enjoy going out for walks so much? My guess is that lots of people with autism like walking, and I wonder if you can work out why. Because walking makes you feel good? Because it's great being out in the open air? Both these replies are true, of course. But for me, the number one reason is that us people with autism love the greenness of nature. Now, you might be thinking, oh, is that all? However, our fondness for nature is, I think, a little bit different from everyone else's. I'm guessing that what touches you in nature is the beauty of the trees and the flowers and things. But to us people with special needs, nature is as important as our own lives. The reason is that when we look at nature, we receive a sort of permission to be alive in this world, and our entire bodies get recharged. However often we're ignored and pushed away by other people, nature will always give us a good big hug here inside our hearts. The greenness of nature is the lives of plants and trees. Green is life. And that's the reason we love to go out for walks. Question 46. Do you enjoy your free time? So what do you do in your free time? Because for people with autism, free time is in fact unfree time. You can do whatever you feel like doing now, someone might tell us. But actually, it's pretty hard for us to find something we do feel like doing, not just like that. If we happen to see some toys or books we're always playing with or reading, then sure, we'll pick them up. Thing is, however, that's not so much what we want to do as something we can do. Playing with familiar items is comforting because we already know what to do with them. So then, of course, people watching us assume, aha, so that's what he likes to do in his free time. What I really want to do, however, is to get stuck in some difficult book or to debate some issue or other. We are misunderstood. and we'd give anything if only we could be understood properly. People with autism would be suffering breakdowns over this all the time if we weren't holding ourselves in so tightly. Please understand what we really are and what we're going through. Question 47. Would you give us an example of something people with autism really enjoy? We do take pleasure in one thing that you probably won't be able to guess, namely, making friends with nature. The reason we aren't much good at people skills is that we think too much about what sort of impression we're making on the other person, or how we should be responding to this or that. But nature is always there at hand to wrap us up gently, glowing, swaying, bubbling, rustling. Just by looking at nature, I feel as if I'm being swallowed up into it. And in that moment, I get the sensation that my body is now a speck from long before I was born, a speck that is melting into nature herself. This sensation is so amazing that I forget that I'm a human being and one with special needs to boot. Nature calms me down when I'm furious and laughs with me when I'm happy. You might think that it's not possible that nature could be a friend, not really. But human beings are part of the animal kingdom too, and perhaps us people with autism still have some leftover awareness of this, buried somewhere deep down. I'll always cherish the part of me that thinks of nature as a friend. The Great Statue of Buddha. When you've been on a trip somewhere, have you ever watched someone burst into tears for no obvious reason? Of course, there is a reason for it, really. It's just that the person who's crying isn't able to tell you what the reason is. For all you know, the person might be crying for joy, but that might not even occur to you. Well, it's much the same for me. The other day, I was visiting a town called Kamakura, where there's this huge statue of Buddha. And when I saw it, I was so deeply moved that I started welling up. It wasn't just Buddha's majesty and dignity. It was the sheer weight of history and generations of people's hopes, prayers, and thoughts that broke over me, and I couldn't stop myself crying. It was as if Buddha himself was saying to me, "All human beings have their hardships to bear, so never swerve away from the path you're on." Everybody has a heart that can be touched by something. Crying isn't necessarily about sadness or meltdowns or being upset. I'd like you to bear that in mind, if you would. Question 48. Why are you always running off somewhere? My mind is forever swaying this way and that. It's not that I want to go running off. I just can't help dashing away to whatever place enters my line of sight. It's really annoying for me, too, because people are always telling me off about it. But I don't know how to stop it. So I'm not doing all this moving around because it pleases me. It isn't even all that calming. It's like being teleported from one place to another without knowing it's happening. Even if someone tries to prevent me, or if something else gets in the way, it happens anyway. I sort of lose myself for a little while. So what's my master plan to fix this problem? I'm constantly battling this impulse to run off, and compared to how it used to be, I'm slowly getting better at controlling it, I think. But I haven't found a really effective way to fix this problem yet. Jogging and walking refresh my body, at least, and once refreshed, I kind of feel back home inside myself. My sense of gravity is restored too, and that calms me down. Question 49. Why do you get lost so often? I've already mentioned how I dash off as soon as I spot anything interesting. There's a different reason for why we get lost so often, however, and I think it's this. We don't really know where we ought to be. You could tell us that we ought to follow someone else or hold their hand, But the fact is that, with or without your suggestion, we're still going to lose our way. Simply put, people with autism never, ever feel at ease wherever we are. Because of this, we wander off or run away in search of some location where we do feel at ease. While we're on this search, it doesn't occur to us to consider how or where we're going to end up. We get swallowed up by the illusion that unless we can find a place to belong, we are going to be all alone in the world. Then eventually we get lost and have to be escorted back to the place we were at or the person we were with before. But our uneasy, unsettled feeling doesn't go away. I don't think we'll ever be able to reach our Shangri-La, however. I know it exists only in the depths of the forest or at the bottom of the deep blue sea. Question 50. Why do you wander off from home? Once, when I was a little kid at kindergarten, I wandered off from home and had to be picked up by the police. Back then, in fact, I used to leave home quite regularly and, as I look back from this distance, I can think of several reasons why I did it. It wasn't because I wanted to go out for a specific purpose, like wanting fresh air. It was because, this is hard to put into words, my body moved because it was lured outside by something there. As I was walking farther from home, I didn't feel any fear or anxiety. It came down to this. If I didn't go outside, then I would cease to exist. Why? I can't say, but I had to keep walking, on and on and on. Turning back was not permitted, because roads never come to an end. Roads speak to us people with autism and invite us onward. There's not much logic in any of this, I know. Until someone brings us back home, we don't know what we've done, and then we're as shocked as anyone. I stopped wandering off from home on the day I very nearly got mowed down by a car because the fear of it made a deep impact on my memory. So when something drastic enough happens, I think we can rein in this habit of wandering off. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out for us. Question 51. Why do you repeat certain actions again and again? The reason people with autism repeat actions isn't simply because they enjoy what they're doing. Watching us, some people can get shocked as if we were possessed. However much you like doing something, it would normally be impossible to keep doing it as often as we do, right? But the repetition doesn't come from our own free will. It's more like our brains keep sending out the same order time and time again. Then, while we're repeating the action, we get to feel really good and incredibly comforted. From our standpoint, I feel a deep envy of people who can know what their own minds are saying and who have the power to act accordingly. My brain is always sending me off on little missions, whether or not I want to do them. And if I don't obey, then I have to fight a feeling of horror. Really, it's like I'm being pushed over the brink into a kind of hell. For people with autism, living itself is a battle. Question 52. Why don't you do what you're supposed to do, even after being told a million times? Kids with autism do what we're not supposed to do again and again, however many times you've told us not to. We understand what you're telling us, okay, but somehow we just repeat the sequence. This happens to me too, and I've thought about how the sequence gets imprinted. First, I do some action or other that I'm not allowed to. Then something else happens as a result. And then I get told off for it. And last, my impulse to recreate the sequence trumps the knowledge that I've been told not to do it, and I end up doing it again.